This is Brian Clark, and I'm interviewing Corbin Wilson on December 17th, 2007, at the Gainsborough Library Branch. Corbin, I guess just to start off with the basics, where and when were you born?
I was born May the 3rd, 1927, on 3rd Street in the city of Roanoke, 3rd Street Southeast.
How long did you live there?
I wasn't there but about maybe 2 years at the most, then moved to 13th Street Southeast, down where the home for the aged is there on 13th Street.
Okay.
It's pretty close to where I used to live. They've changed all that and made a home out of it now. So.
Okay. And how long did you live there?
We moved there, well, during the Depression, my parents, we lived there, and they had the close to Merkin Visco, where my dad worked, and we went to the country down Bedford County. Mm-hmm. So I must have lived there about 4 years. I was about 5 or 6 when that happened.
So when you moved out to the country in Bedford, was that outside of Benton area?
It was on down next to Huddleston, now Smith Mountain Lake area.
And did you move back towards Roanoke after that?
Or? Yeah, we moved back in Roanoke on Highland Avenue.
What neighborhood is Highland in?
In southeast Roanoke.
How long did you live in Highland?
I lived there until I was about 8 or 9, I guess, something like that. And then we moved on Peachin Avenue, 1100 block of Peachin Avenue, when I was about 9 years old. That was in southeast also. I went to Morningside Elementary School, Jackson Junior High School, and Jefferson High School.
So you moved a lot around the city.
I did.
Now, was it Peachin Avenue? Was that the last place you lived in the city growing up? Or?
No, I'm still living in the city of Roanoke.
Okay.
But we moved, I got married in 1947. Mm-hmm. And we moved across the street in an apartment on Peachin Avenue. Lived there for about 3 years, and then moved up on top of the hill on Peachin Avenue. My daughter was born up there, my first daughter, 1949. And then we moved to Williamson Road in 1951, and I've been in Williamson Road since then. But I moved several times to Williamson Road.
I can tell.
I told everybody every time a rent came due, I moved.
Well, tell me, you mentioned going to Morningside Elementary, Jackson Junior High, and Jefferson High School. Tell me a little bit about that experience going to school just in Roanoke growing up.
Well, it was good. The Morningside was only about a half a block, so I walked to school and went there. Ms. Richardson was one of my teachers. I remember her. She had something to do with the Girl Scouts. One reason I remember her because she did have worked with the Girl Scouts. But it was close by, and as far as I know, I did well in school. I didn't get into too much trouble. I remember going to the principal's office a couple of times, but I don't know what it was for. But it must have been something minor. I'm sure I didn't get into much trouble. Mm-hmm. And then going to Jackson Junior, I also walked. It was probably about 20 minutes from my home on Peachin Avenue. And we didn't have a cafeteria over there, so I had to go home for lunch. So I walked home for lunch and back to school, and then in the afternoons, played some baseball in Jackson Junior, and Mr. Costco was my coach at Jackson Junior. And then he also went to Jefferson High School after I left Jackson. But I had some good teachers at Jackson Junior High School, and then I left there when I was 17 and went in service and went in the Navy. Came back and took a GED test and went to work in the fire department.
Now, when you were in the service, did you have any active... were you actively in a war at that point?
I was in World War II, but I went in February 1945. And, of course, the war was over in April of 45, so I was on a naval ammunition depot most of the time, supervising unloading ammunition when the ships came into... I was stationed at Fort Mifflin, Philadelphia. They came into the naval yards there, and we unloaded the... Well, they unloaded the ammunition and brought it in. We stored it until they came back out. Then I transferred from there to Leonardo, New Jersey, and same... position on Naval Ammunition Depot.
Boy, you have moved around quite a bit.
I have moved around quite a bit. Went north all the time. Mm-hmm.
So when you came back and got your GED, Did you stay in Roanoke after that for
a
while?
I worked in the Roanoke Fire Department for almost 33 years.
Where were you based out of in Roanoke?
Well, I was on Williamson Road when I went in the fire department in 1949. They just annexed the Williamson Road section, and they hired six new firefighters to finish out that area. And I worked in the Williamson Road area until 1956, and then I went to Melrose and 24th Street, number 9 fire station, when I made lieutenant. Stayed up there for 7 years and came back out on Williamson Road to number 2 station, stayed there until I retired. So actually, I was at that station for about 25 years.
So you've seen a little bit of Roanoke.
I've seen most of Roanoke.
Let's step back for just a minute, Corbin. Can you tell me just a little bit about your parents and any brothers or sisters that you may have had?
I'm an only child.
Okay.
My parents, both of them were from Bedford County. My mother died. I was turned 16 in May, and she died in August with a cerebral hemorrhage at the age of 37. My dad worked at the American Visco till they closed that plant. Then he went to work at Johnson Carper, which is a furniture company out on Hollins Road, and worked there until he passed away in 1970. They were both very good people as far as church work. My dad, when my mother died in 1943, he remarried in 1945. To Josie DeLong, and she was my red-headed stepmother. And after my dad died, I had to pretty much take care of her. I kept her until she passed away a week before her 96th birthday in 2000.
And what was your dad's name?
Elisha, E-L-I-S-H-A, Roosevelt Wilson.
And your mom's name?
Carly Leftwich Wilson.
And Leftwich was her maiden name?
Leftwich was her maiden name, and that's my middle name, Leftwich. I have my mother's maiden name as my middle name.
I know you moved around quite a bit when you were growing up, but what home really stands out in your mind as your childhood home? What did that look like for you?
It was a store and a half on Peachin Avenue, 1136. My mother and dad took that house over in 1936, I believe it was. They had boarders there, and Miss Crouch used to keep boarders. And her mother got sick, and they had to move out. So my dad and mother took over the house and kept the boarders. There was four women and three men boarding there with her, with them. She cooked meals and took care of the house and so forth. But that was more or less a home to me. I remember that one better than any of the rest of them as a child. I had the mumps there. I had all my childhood diseases there, and it was convenient for us. We right close to a bus line, close to a streetcar line. It was where I had my bicycle and a lot of close friends. We played ball a lot in the street. And over in Jackson Park, which is Buena Vista now, used to go over there. I went over there before the city of Roanoke ever took it over. I think they bought it in 1939. But I played over there a little bit before then. Had to crawl under a fence, but we still got in there and played some ball.
What was it like growing up with boarders? I mean, that's something that's not too common now. Was that a one-room thing where they rented the room and then had meals?
Yes.
Was it with your family?
Uh-huh. They had three bedrooms actually upstairs. And the four ladies shared those two rooms upstairs. And then had three men. One of them was my dad's brother. And they stayed in one room and had two beds in that, and I slept with with my uncle a lot of the times up there. My mother and dad had a bedroom downstairs, and she furnished meals for all the boarders. And the lady that my dad married after my mother died was a good friend, one of the ladies that boarded there. And she and my mother were good friends, and mother, when we bought the house next door, it was a little bungalow in 1940 something, I guess it was. And moved over there, and Dad did some work on the house and put a basement under. Didn't have a basement. He dug a basement out. And my mother said, as soon as we get able, said, I'd like to build another room on the house and ask Joe to come and live with us. And then she passed away, and my dad and Joe got married. So I had her until she passed away in 2000.
And at this house where the boarders are at any point growing up, did you have a garden?
No.
Not
growing up, we didn't have a garden.
For any of the houses that you had growing up, did any of them have porches or anything?
Both of them had porches on them, front porch and back porch, actually.
Was that a focal point of
Well, the back porch, was pretty much a focal point. We used to sit on the back porch a lot. Mm-hmm. And it was convenient when I had Hoop and Cough. We had a grocery store just about actually right across the street from Morningside School. I went up there one day, and every time I'd get a coughing spell, I'd run all the way back home and grab hold of one of those columns and do my hooping around that column on the back porch.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned playing ball and having a bike and everything, but what kind of specific activities did you do growing up in Roanoke neighborhoods?
Well, pretty much just played sports, baseball and activities like that. We played a lot of ball out in the street in the afternoons. My granddaughter was doing a project in her school when she was doing something about a history lesson, and they wanted to interview someone that came through the Depression area. So she asked me some questions, and I told her, I said, well, we always played ball out in the street, and about 5 o'clock, all the kids would run in the house and turn the radio on and watch the Lone Ranger. She said, watch the Lone Ranger? How'd you watch it on a radio? I said, well, we just made up our own stories as the Lone Ranger rode around. Mm-hmm. But that was one of our basic things. We didn't have a lot of things going on. We just mostly played kickball and baseball, softball, something like that in the street. And in activities at school, we played in some sports at school. But basically, we just made up our own things as far as games and so forth, and kids played pretty much in their own neighborhood. I didn't do a lot of traveling around away from home too far because, you know, it was basically a home-style lifestyle, and we always hung around pretty close to home. All the kids did were in the area. A lot of kids there.
Was it hard getting to know the kids since you were an only child? Or
no, basically I had a lot of good friends over there and still make contact with some of them even today. The Hubbards lived next door, and the Brattons lived up on the corner, and Blankenships lived across the street. And that's one of the girls I married, called her Tootsie. She was Claudine Blankenship. We were married in 1947 and had 45 and a half years, and she passed away in 1993 from a heart problem. And I've remarried and found another good lady, so we've been married 12 years. Mm-hmm. We went to the same church, bowled on the same bowling team, and sang in the choir together, and I've been singing in the church choir for 56 years. They won't get rid of me for some reason. I don't know why.
And I'm sorry, what was your wife's name?
Claudine.
Claudine?
C-L-A-U-D-I-N-E. Nicknamed Tootsie.
And she passed away and you remarried, and what was your second wife's name?
Demarris, D-E-M-A-R-R-I-S.
You told me a little bit about your schooling. Were there any specific moments going through elementary, junior high, or high school that really stand out to you growing up when you did?
Not so much in elementary school. I was in an opera in junior high school. Played, well, took music, voice, and so forth over there.
That's why they won't kick you out of the church.
Well, I guess so. Miss Denny, I believe, was the music teacher over there. And the Jacobs girl and I sang a duet in that operetta. And Miss Shelton was my English teacher, homeroom teacher. She just had started teaching and evidently had gotten out of college and just started teaching when I started Jackson Junior. And she was real small and wore a real small shoe. And I asked the kid her about if she was ever going to get married. She said she wore a size 4 shoe, and she would if she could find somebody to afford to buy her shoes. And we must have gotten into discussion or something about something one day, and I had bushy curly hair then, and she told me to go sit down, and I said, well, I want to do something else. And so she grabbed me by the nap of the head right there and pulled me all the way back to my chair and set me down in the chair. So I always respected her, and when I came back out of the Navy and went by to see her, Jackson Jr., we had a good conversation, and she told me to come back and see her anytime. But she passed away, I guess, about 2000, something like that. But she was always a good friend. We kept contact with her. But that was the only real experience, I guess, I had at junior high school other than playing sports and so forth.
Well, that's a little different than how it would have to be handled now. Huh?
Yeah, oh yeah. No, you wouldn't do that now.
You mentioned the Depression earlier, and I'm curious about that because if you were born in 27, you really grew up throughout the heart of the Depression.
Pretty much, yeah.
What was that like growing up for you? Did you notice a difference?
I didn't really notice a difference because my dad was working at American Visco until they closed it in I guess it must have been 32 or 33, something like that, for a couple of years. And we moved to the country, and of course he worked as a carpenter down there. One of his brother-in-laws was a carpenter, and he had some work down there. So we had a little garden, a little place there in the country, and I didn't miss any meals, you could tell, but I really didn't suffer too much from a depression. I'm sure my parents didn't do too well, but as far as finances are concerned, but they came back up here and, like I said, and rented that house and then bought the one next door. I think they paid $1,200 for the little house next door to the one we lived in on Peachin Avenue. And it took them a long time to pay that off.
That's quite a bit different than today.
Oh, yeah.
Well, once you came back from the service and you got your GED, did you go on to any schooling after that, or was it schooling in the sense of going through the fire department?
Just mostly through the fire department. I went to Virginia West and took a class out there in fire science. And I made lieutenant in 1956 and then made captain in 1972 and retired as a captain in number 2 engine company. Firefighting was a different set of different tactics then than it is now. Of course, they've made a lot of changes, modern techniques and equipment and so forth, but it was pretty tough when I first went there.
What really stands out in your mind as being very different? What was
the
so tough about
equipment
it?
That you used? They had we just mostly fought fire in the street clothes back in the early days, especially during the daytime, and you had stuff to boots and so forth to put on at night, but you didn't have any of the breathing equipment that they have now, apparatus, Scott air packs and so forth. We had what they call burrow masks, and you couldn't breathe in those things, so most of the time nobody used them anyway. They just went in and crawled around on their hands and knees, put the fire out and came out and smoked and spit and coughed and light up a cigarette. And I quit smoking 40 years ago. Mm. And I'm glad I did.
I bet.
Yeah.
I bet. I'm curious about the firefighting techniques too, because with all the new equipment, were there a lot of injuries, or were you able to save most of the buildings that were on fire?
Well, I think we saved more than a lot of the things that the techniques that they use today, because now they have to wait for backup companies to get there. When I was there earlier, we'd go to the fire and what they call a booster hose was on a reel. They don't have them on the apparatus any longer. We'd pull that booster hose off and go in and put out a bedroom fire or kitchen fire or something like that real quick, automobile fires especially. And you get inside quicker and you didn't have to wait for a backup. Whoever got there first pretty much took over. And if they gave you a signal for working fire, then you brought them a hose line with water from a fire hydrant and backed them back up with that. But the techniques have changed a lot. They have a different, like I said, the Scott air packs. They can go in and breathe better and so forth. And it's just a lot of different things have changed. And that's pretty much a federal mandate now that you have to wait on somebody. You can't send somebody in by themselves unless there is life at stake or something like that.
Did you have a hard time adjusting to those changes over your long tenure with the fire department?
Well, not too much on my part, because they didn't change till after. I've been retired 26 years, so they changed mostly after I left the fire department.
If I were to say Roanoke or Southeast or Bedford County where you grew up, what is the first memory or two that come to mind? And not necessarily the earliest, but what's the first kind of memories that really stand out to you?
I would say that there, like I said, on Peachin Avenue, that the house where they had the boarders, the kids in that area, I knew most all of them, and we all hung around together, and like I said, we did things together, and I worked at a grocery store, well, it was a confectionery over there when I was in high school, and delivered drinks and ice cream and stuff like that on a bicycle. They'd call it in and I'd take it out and deliver it. And that was part of the meeting a lot of people and picking up, delivering. Well, I didn't deliver any alcohol because I was underage, but they had beer there at the place and they sold that. But mainly it was working like a soda fountain, what I was doing, and then delivery when the orders came in for stuff, peanuts, popcorn, Cracker Jacks, and ice cream and things like that. I delivered all over Southeast pretty much on a bicycle.
So people would just call in and say, hey, I need this?
Yeah, and I'd take it over there. I'd give the address, and I'd take it to them.
Do you remember what the name of the confectionery was?
Gussler's. Okay. Gussler's Confectionery. was on the corner of Kenmore Avenue and 9th Street. The building's still there, but I think it's some electrical contractor using it now.
Yeah, they do change over
time.
Yeah,
they do.
What was it like living at home? What was it like living there with your folks? And, you know, what were the important things over the course of the day that really stood out for your family?
Well, back when we had the boarders, I can remember my mother in the kitchen. She spent quite a bit of time in the kitchen fixing breakfast and dinner and lunch and so forth for the people that were boarding there. Of course, most of them worked at American Visco and came in for lunch and then went back over to work, and then I came in the afternoons for dinner. But mostly it was just being there in the home and parents and seeing her in the kitchen preparing meals and fixing the dining room table and setting the table and so forth. And then my being in and out and coming in listening to the radio in the afternoons, and my dad coming in from work. And we didn't have a lot of contact with him. Well, I had a lot of contact with him too, but he hunted and fished, and I never did get into that because of the sports activities, I guess. But my dad liked to hunt, he liked to fish, and worked around the house and did a lot of things around the house too. But like I said, he dug a basement out over on the house that he bought next door and had a couple of guys to help him. Built a concrete wall in, out of cinder block, rather, in there for the basement walls and put a basement under the house. But it was good growing around the house. I had a good upbringing, good parents, faithful in the church. And I remember we were on our way to church in 1941 when we got the word that Japan had bombed Pearl Harbor. It was on a Sunday afternoon. They had sent out a special newspaper. Boy was pulling a wagon up the street hollering extra, extra, and we got the paper and it said Pearl Harbor had been bombed, but it was late in the afternoon on Sunday afternoon when he got the word. But being home was good. I really enjoyed my upbringing with my parents. And like I said, my mother died when I was 16, and that was kind of a heartbreak to me. And I lost interest in a lot of things because I wanted to get in service. And from the time I was, after she passed away, till I turned 17, I kept asking my dad to sign papers so I could go in the Navy. And he finally did in February. I went in the Navy in February 1945.
So you really wanted to go into the Navy even though there was a war going on?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
What was your motivation?
Well, you know, you heard so much about atrocities that had taken place with Germany and Japan. And after Japan bombed Pearl Harbor, it was pretty much a sneak attack. And I just felt like I needed to get in there and do something to try to help a country. And I've got a picture here that I was in this Virginia State Guard before I went into the Navy. So it was this Virginia State Guard in 1943 and 1944. I was probably 15 or 16 years old, but the National Guard had been called up, so they formed this Virginia State Guard. And there was a bunch of us high school kids that operated out of that.
Was any of your motivation an interest or a desire to get out of Roanoke for any reason, or was it just to...
No, just a matter of getting in and helping with the war effort.
Okay. You mentioned, I wanted to go back to the radio, that you're coming in the afternoons. Do you remember any particular shows that you really kind of made it a point in your day to get in for?
The Lone Ranger.
Lone Ranger.
And, yeah, that was one of them. Mm-hmm. And Spider-Man and all of those things that went on back in those days. They were a little different than they are now, but the comic books. And the Lone Ranger was one of my favorites. I always tried to get on there in the afternoon. I think it was about 5 o'clock, 5:30, something like that, it came on. And most of the kids liked to get home, and that was supper time too, so get home and listen to the radio and kind of pick out some things. You could see Hi-Ho Silver and picture that like you would if it was on television now.
You said you worked around the house a little bit there where the boarders were. Did you have any specific chores that were your responsibilities?
I don't recall any specific chores, but I, you know, empty trash and pick up and help my mother set the table and put the plates out and silverware and stuff like that.
Did you have any family stories that were passed down from grandparents, or are there any traits or traditions that are passed down through your family that you've collected and maybe passed on as well?
Kind of like that. One of the things is Christmas. We used to always go to my mother's down in Huddleston for Christmas. My grandfather would, all the families would come back, all the brothers and sisters would come back and bring the kids for Christmas. My grandfather would get out in the cow pasture about 5:30 or 6 o'clock in the morning to set off a stick of dynamite and wake everybody up. And I mean, that just jarred everything around there. He'd go out there and set that stick of dynamite off. And I said, I've told people that for years. And they said, shoot off a stick of dynamite? I said, yeah, he did that in the cow pasture. And one of our traditions was that they always fixed oysters on Christmas morning. Had a long table with benches on either side. My grandfather sat at one end, my grandmother at the other, and all the rest of us sat on those benches on the side. But they'd fry about a gallon of oysters and fix biscuits and eggs and bacon and so forth and sausage gravy. And we still do that now. My family gets together, and I have two daughters, and they both live in Newport News and Chesapeake. And we go to get together at Christmas, and we always fix oysters and fry eggs and scrambled eggs and bacon and make sausage gravy and have a big breakfast for Christmas morning before we usually open the presents even. And the grandkids sometimes don't like it too well, but and I'm sure I didn't either when I was a kid, but that was one of the traditions that we always did, breakfast before we opened presents. And I can still recall that, and I still enjoy doing that. And my kids, they're going to continue it, I'm sure.
That's good. About how many folks do you remember sitting around that table at your grandparents' house?
Well, let's see. She had five sisters, and two brothers. So that was 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. It must have been 17 or 18 around that table, because a couple of her sisters had some older children than I am. One of them was in the Navy. That's one of the things that kind of led me to the Navy. He went out of high school in 1932 and went in the Navy. And he was in World War II and over in Japan on some battleships and so forth. And I kind of always looked up to him, but seeing him in his uniform and so forth. But it must have been 17 or 18 people around the dinner table. And I have now 13 grandchildren, 4 great-grandchildren. Since I'm married to Damaris, she had 3 sons and I had 2 daughters. So between us, we've got 13 grandchildren. And now with my kids, I've got 5 grandkids and 2 son-in-laws and 2 daughters. So we have 17. We had 17 in my house last Christmas. They all came up here. I said, we'd been going down there for Christmas, and they decided they won't all come back up here for Christmas. So we put mattresses on the floor and got a big old 3-bedroom house. My wife now loves Christmas. She puts up 4 Christmas trees in the house. Has been putting up 6, but she didn't get the 4 this year. And all of them have a different theme. Outside, my brother-in-law decorates the outside, and I'm afraid an airplane's gonna mistake it for Woodrum Field and land on top of the house because the thing's so lit up. But it's on Collingwood Street. Now people come by. We had 37 people over Saturday night from church. Our choir, we did a little musical Sunday night and had a pageant. We had all of the people from the choir and pageant people over there for dinner. A lot of them came because, they were going to have a parents' night out, and they canceled that because of the weather situation, but a lot of them came because of that. So we ended up with 37 people over there, and wife did all the cooking. She had a meal that you wouldn't believe.
We're definitely passing down that tradition.
Yeah.
Well, just stepping back to a few more questions about growing up, were there any businesses or shops besides Gussler's that you really frequented growing up as a child?
Poff's grocery store that I was talking about a while ago that I was getting my whooping cough spells. Miss Poff and them, when they first got one of the coffee grinders that you put coffee beans in and grind up your coffee, I was in the store one day and getting something from my mother. And I heard that thing roaring, and I thought, what in the world's going on here? And so I lifted the little lid on it and stuck my finger, but it clipped the end of my finger off, and I grabbed it and took off home. Miss Poff, like they had a fit, she came all the way down to the house to see if I was all right. And it just barely did nick the end of my finger, but it was just, the thing was running down. But I used to go to that grocery store a lot, and I think the only one, they had 3 children, 2 of them still living. And one of them had a business up on Melrose Avenue, a car wash. I see Poff had a car wash up there. But they were nice people, and that store, and there was a McClarty's drugstore on 9th Street right across from Jackson Junior High School. And we frequented that a lot from school. They used to have these great big old, must have been a 5-gallon jar with dill pickles in them. They were like big as your arm almost, and you'd go over and buy one of those things for a nickel. And I, one thing I didn't tell you about, I worked at Texas Tavern. Have you ever been in Texas Tavern?
Oh, yeah.
Well, I worked there in 1944 when I was going to Jefferson High School. Worked the night shift, get off from school and go in there and work till 11 or 12 o'clock. Worked the counter, worked the grill. And Paul Starkey was there, Mr. Bullington was the original owner. He was managing the place when I was there. And Paul Starkey was a boxer. He used to promote boxing in the city of Roanoke. And I worked for Paul Starkey. And one of the boys that worked with me in the fire department when I was at number 9, Gordon Barber, went to Texas Tavern and became manager down there. He left the fire department after 20-some years. Went to the Texas Tavern and stayed down there as manager for several years. But I always enjoyed working down there.
Well, it's a local legend.
Oh, it is.
Was it like that then?
Pretty much. It hasn't changed. The only thing that's changed is used to have a buttermilk machine in there and sweet milk where the Coca-Cola machine is now. And you serve buttermilk in a glass and sweet milk in a glass. But prices, of course, have changed. You could get a hamburger for a nickel and a bowl of chili for a dime, hot dogs for a nickel. My kids, they come in, they still got to go to Texas Tavern and get a hamburger and a bowl of chili. Grandkids, too.
I have a friend that's his ritual every time he comes in.
Yeah, town. Yeah. That's something. And Roanoke, we understand, too. I haven't been down there quite. Looked like I kind of lost the taste for the hot dogs after they got rid of that little 6-ounce Coca-Cola bottle when they changed the Cokes and went to Mountain Cokes. It looked like it changed the taste of the hot dog. I'm sure it didn't, but.
Well, Corbin, what is your? Do you have a fondest childhood memory that you often tell stories about?
Well, I guess it was going back to those Christmas things that I had a cousin, Bobby Ashwell, he's two years younger than I am, but he and I were always pretty good buddies, and of course, my uncle used to get us in scraps. We'd be working in tomato fields, picking tomatoes or something, and he'd throw a tomato at one of us and said, Bobby threw it at you, and then we'd get to scuffing in the tomato field. But dynamite and playing around with kids and aunts and uncles and so forth there on the farm always was a pleasure for me.
What was important to you in Roanoke? You've lived here a long time. What really stands out as being a big part of Roanoke to you?
Well, I guess the fire department was, my activities there. And my church life, I've been at Oakland Baptist Church since 1951. I've been singing in the choir for 56 years. And in the Williamson Road area that I've always lived out there, well, not always, but since 1951. And it's pretty much an area that I respect, and I think it's a good area for people to live in. And like I said, the fire department was pretty much my life back in those days. And I didn't have a lot of outside activities other than that, playing some golf. And did have a little garden one time. Got kind of hung up with one of my former preachers. He said, do you want to share a garden? I said, yeah, well, that sounds like a good idea. He said, well, come on. I said, we'll share a garden. He used me like a mule. I pulled the plow. But we did share the garden, and it was a lot of fun. But Reverend Lippincott. But I don't really have any outstanding things that, other than the fire department and activities that were involved in that. Of course, we worked 24 on, 24 off. And then you got a 3-day break after 1969, I think it was. We went into a different work schedule and got a different work schedule, 24 on, 24 off. And then you had a 3-day break, which gave you a little more time.
When you were growing up, did you have any specific places that were kind of maybe a retreat or just special places that you went to, particularly as an only child?
No, like I said, it was pretty much, stayed around home. We didn't do a lot of traveling. We did go to Virginia Beach occasionally for a vacation, but I don't remember a great deal about that. It was, I was probably 10, 11 years old. Used to go up on the Skyline Drive and on Easter a lot. We'd go up there and just drive around and at Peak Savard or someplace like that.
Was that a family tradition?
No, I guess it was in a sense. My mother and dad and one of her sisters and one of my cousins, we used to meet them up there and have lunch, picnic more or less. It's hard for me to remember a lot of the things that happened back when I was a child, I get to talking about it, and sometimes they'll come back to me, sometimes they won't.
Well, and we'll go with what we can, because yeah. I'll be honest, I'm not quite 30, and I understand that as well, even at this relatively young age.
And I love to tell jokes when I get one that I can tell people. And I was telling one at the church function we had Saturday night about this lady cutting grass, and a cat ran across in front of her lawnmower, and she cut the cat's tail off. She stopped the lawnmower and picked up the cat's tail, and she held onto it for a little bit, and she didn't know what in the world she was going to do with it. So she finally decided, I'm going to take it to Walmart. You're supposed to ask me, why did she take it to Walmart?
I was trying to wonder that. Why did she take it to Walmart?
Walmart's the biggest retailer in the world.
Hopefully that was good for the cat then. When you were away at the working for the Navy and up and down the East Coast, as it sounds like, what was it like coming back to Roanoke when you returned?
Well, coming back, I remember we rode the train a lot from New York and from Washington, D.C., and you walked most of the way because the trains were so packed with people. You didn't have a place to sit. You just walked from one end of the train to the other. But coming back, I remember meeting some friends here. We went to Jefferson High School and met some of the old buddies that were still, you know, maybe be home on leave and so forth. And met my family. And I got a picture here that was made down at my granddaddy's in the Navy uniform. It was pretty much enjoyable coming home and getting with the family and being with them for a weekend or something like that. We didn't have much time. I only had, I think, one leave, but it was been the consequence. It was right after I came out of boot camp. But the rest of them were just mostly weekend passes. But it was enjoyable coming home to be with them and dating a few of the old girls that was still around.
When you got out of the service, did it feel any different coming back to Roanoke for the last time? Or not for the last time, but to come in and not have to leave again?
Yeah, I think I enjoyed that. Of course, like I said, I went back to school and they had a veterans home room and went to Jefferson, and then I went to VO and took some English classes and then took my GED test. I was working at Davidson's Clothiers before I went in the fire department. And Mr. Silverman did the window decorations, and Mr. Davidson wanted me to stay on. I think I was making $35 a week. And he wanted me to stay on and learn how to decorate windows. And I said, well, I've already applied for the fire department. And when I went to the fire department, I never had been in a fire station. A friend of my mother and dad's and mine, he used to be my Boy Scout troop leader. Carl Cox was in the fire department. And he told me they were going to hire some because they were hiring, had annexed Williamson Road section. They were going to hire some firefighters. I went up to Chief Mullins and put my application in. I never had been in a fire station before that and was hired a few days later on the job to go to work in a fire department after I got my GED test. But I enjoyed that, and the six of us, and they separated us and put us in all in different locations, and none of the new men went to the same location. It was a little different going in the fire department then than it is now. You have to take a training class and all of that now. They put you on an apparatus and you learned on the job then. I mean, you pretty much started out doing the same thing that everybody else was doing. You just had to watch somebody else and know what was taking place. You had training sessions during the summer and you trained at the fire stations that you were located in, but you didn't go to seminars and so forth like they do now.
Was it more like an apprenticeship?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Rather than kind of having the certification before you start?
Yeah, you do now, yeah. But now then you didn't. You just went to work, and if you panned out, you stayed. If you didn't, you lost your job, I guess, but I never knew anybody that didn't pan out in the old days. If they wanted to, they stayed, and some of them didn't like it and didn't stay, but most of them did.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned before that you didn't have a whole lot of activity outside of the fire department in the community, and that alone is enough, but were there any other groups, or you mentioned church, or other civic sort of activities that you participated in throughout your life?
Well, in the last few years, there's been a group of what they call a Southeast group. People that grew up in Southeast. We meet on the third Wednesday of every month at the Roanoke restaurant for lunch. And I started a little project trying to do something about Buena Vista House. It had gotten in such deplorable condition, the city didn't have the money or wasn't taking the money to keep the repairs up on it. And the one in Villa Heights and the one over in 13th Street that belonged to the Fishmans, all of them were in bad shape, and they finally spending money to put the roof on the one in Fishman Park. But now they're going to sell it to others. And it was in such bad shape that I wrote a letter to city council, to the city manager, to the parks and recreation manager about the condition of the Buena Vista, and told them when I was a kid we used to go over and play in that house and how much I enjoyed it, and people that grew up over there had dances and so forth in there. And it had in the basement slots in the wall where you used to, I guess, fought the Indians. They had where you could stick a rifle barrel out and fight. And they've closed up all of that now. But the house itself had gotten in such deplorable condition. I did try to get some work done on that, but apparently they're not going to do it. They're going to try to sell it to an outsider and let them do something with it. But they're both on the Historical Society list, and they have to keep them up or let them fall down one and then do some repairs to them. But they're not doing anything right now.
No, you said you played there as a kid in Buena Vista. Was that private at that point, or did the city own it already?
The city bought it in 1939, I believe it was. And But I played there as a child before it was, well, Fannie Boone and some of the others worked over there in the recreation department. And it was a recreation center at that time. Now they don't use it much for anything. They've got, I think the Preservation Society has some places in it that's rented. And then they do have some activities, square dances and so forth that still take place over there. But that's about all that's being used for now. They do have a couple of rooms on the right-hand side as you go in. There's pretty much period furniture and so forth in there. They've got it gated off so you can't get in there, but it's period furniture and so forth in there.
Speaking of places like Buena Vista, do you remember any cultural events that you attended as a child or as an adult in Roanoke that really stand out?
Well, one of the first ones was a Boy Scout event that took place. My dad and I went to Hotel Roanoke, and I don't remember what the occasion was, but it was a Boy Scout event, and we all had, I had never been in a place like the Hotel Roanoke for dinner or anything like that. We had all kinds of silverware and stuff out there, forks and spoons. And my dad said, which one are you supposed to use first? I said, I have no idea, just grab one and start eating, I guess. And then the Boy Scouts had a camporee up at Fishman Park in summer, and they'd come from all over the state in there and put up tents and dig latrines and food banks and so forth in there. I remember that. We got rained out one time. A storm came through there and washed everything out. But that was pretty much it as far as we had an Adirondacks camp down at on Hales. Hales Ford down in that area for a Boy Scout camp. But most of it was either there or activities around the home. We just didn't, I didn't, and I don't think many of my friends did back there in those days. We just didn't go too far away from home. I don't remember ever having, I went and rode a bicycle out to Tinkerbell. It used to be out on Hollins Road, out there next to where the Food Line store is now. I rode my bicycle out there to go swimming as a kid, 13, 14 years old, and we had a scout camp out there also. Went out there, spent a week out there as a camping trip. But most of the things that we did as children then were pretty much home-related, around the home area anyway. You didn't travel too far. I used to go to the old Rialto Theater on Saturday, which was right there next to the Ronald Weenie stand, Rialto Theater. You'd go in there for a quarter and stay all day long, see two or three serials and a couple of movies, and then take a dime and go next door and get you a hot dog and a drink and go walk home. That's pretty much it was it. I mean, you walked just about everywhere you went. If you had bus fare, you rode the bus or streetcar, but otherwise you walked. And most of my time was either on a bicycle or walking because I didn't have a whole lot of money.
Probably pretty typical.
Yeah, I'm sure it was.
Were there any strong community leaders in Southeast where you were growing up that really stand out in your mind? Or role models?
Well, not so much as... But I can recall, but the scoutmaster was Carl Cox, was a good leader. I worked in the fire department and worked with a lot of kids. I don't remember being, you know, actively involved in a lot of those activities myself, but and I don't recall a lot of, but my dad was a Lion in the Lions Club, and he was president of the Lions Club in Southeast for a couple of years. But I just never did get involved in a lot of those things.
You've been here a long time over the years.
80.
80 years, long time. How has, I guess I'm thinking specifically Southeast, but Roanoke as a in general as well, but how has it changed over the years?
Well, Roanoke has changed quite a bit, but Southeast to me has changed a lot too, because it's depleted in the comforts of people that used to live over there. They worked at Norfolk Southern Railroad or American Visco, and they kept their homes up pretty much in good shape, but it's gone down a lot in the last few years. I don't know why, because I guess a lot of those people moved out and renters have moved in, and they just maybe not financially able to take a responsibility of keeping them up like they should have, or the people that own them just rent them and take, you know, trying to get as much money out of them as they can and not doing any upkeep on them until they have to. But the Southeast had gone down a lot, but it's beginning to make a turnaround, I think, and in areas that had gone down a lot, they are making some improvements on the homes, and you can tell the difference in the looks of them now but what they were a few years ago. But Roanoke itself is it's made some improvements. People say there's not a lot to do here, but we always managed to do things ourselves, managed to make what we wanted to do happen. And, you know, we didn't do a lot of nightlife and so forth, but used to go to some of the, I have been up to Rockledge Inn to some of the dances that he used to have up there before that burned. And the old American Legion over there used to be right down from Hotel Roanoke. It burned in 1957, and we used to have a lot of activities there, sporting events. Used to have some of the Urban Sharp dances over there like they used to have back in the 20s, where you dance, put tags on your back and numbers, and you dance till you couldn't dance anymore all night long. Actually, they danced over there all night long. And as a small child, I was about, I don't know, 10, 11 years old, we were over there watching them dance one time. And my mother got me to go up to the stage and ask him to play a song. And I forget the name of it now, but, I know what it was. I Only Want a Buddy, Not a Sweetheart. And he made me stand up and sing it with him after I told him about it. I was about 7 or 8 years old, I guess. I don't know. But anyway, I was really embarrassed to get up there and stand up there and sing. But it was a lot of fun. But Roanoke's made a lot of improvements downtown. It's a lot of the new construction, the tower, and so forth downstairs, downtown. Now they're putting a lot of apartments and so forth down there, and condos. It's a viable city. I think we have a lot of strength, and I sometimes have some doubts about some of the things that happen with the city council, but I'm sure they're trying to do the best they can, and Mayor Harris and all of the rest of them, and I'm not politically involved, but I do try to keep up with some of the things that are happening down there.
It's hard not to sometimes.
Yeah.
Well, tell me a little bit about Williamson Road, too, from your perspective of being here for so long. How was that when you were a kid to now, especially living over that way?
Well, back when I was a kid, Williamson Road was just a dirt road, gravel, most of it. It hadn't been paved or anything. And then after the, I guess Sears and Roebuck moved out there, you know, where they, you know, where it is now called Searstown. It was in the 1500 block of Williamson Road, right up above Orange Avenue on the left-hand side there now. Powers bought it and it's got a post office and hardware and a lot of stuff in there now. But that was really a landmark in the early days of Williamson Road. Davidson's seafood place out there on the far end of Williamson Road in the curve. And it had a lot of restaurants out there that were pretty well maintained and people, you know, freaked to them pretty much back in when I first went into Williamson Road. I can't think of some of the names of them, but they were pretty popular as far as drive-ins and so forth. Williamson Road has made an improvement to the city of Roanoke as far as the activities and the housing and so forth out there. When I first went in the fire department, a lot of that was still just in wheat fields and corn fields. Over where Valley View Mall is, was all a big farmland over there, and out next to the airport, the Andrews homes, they had two big homes out there, and it was pretty much farm and dairy products and so forth out there. But it's really changed a lot and become a viable area out in that part of the city. Pretty well filled in now. There's not many lots that you can buy to build anything on out in the Williamson Road section. And that's the reason a lot of people moved on out and bought it down 460 and places like that.
What was it like for your family when the Visco's closed? Because I understand that was a pretty big thing for Roanoke. How did you remember that impacting the area?
It was pretty devastating for a lot of people. I think they were down, well, at one time they had about 5,000 people working over there. And I think they were down to maybe under 1,000 or so when it closed. But still, a lot of people had lost their jobs over a period of time as it began to downsize. And it was pretty devastating because a lot of those people were in their 30s and 40s and without a job. And it was, you know, at that time, it was kind of difficult to find a job at 30 and 40, maybe 50 years old even. It was hard on people. My dad left there in 1952 and moved to the country, and I took up a little grocery store down there and ran it for 5 or 6 years. And then he came back up here and went to work at Johnson Carper as a machinist over there until he retired.
So he actually left before it?
He left in 1952 before it actually closed down.
Do you remember any other big economic events that really stood out to you living here in the valley for so long?
Well, Johnson Carper closing was a big area. The furniture plant over there on Holland Road was a pretty good size employer. And there was one up in Salem that was a furniture place, and I can't think of the name of that now. But they were pretty big employment for people. But I guess this hospital is really the biggest thing that's happened to bring, you know, more employees and so forth in now than more. But I can't think of anything else other than the American Visco and, well, and the downsizing the East End shops. That took a lot of people out of here, too. Now they're building cars over there again, and this guy's leased out to another company. But when Norfolk Southern took over and moved their offices to Norfolk, it was a big impact on the city of Roanoke because they took most of the, well, they took all of the big head people out of here and took him to Norfolk, and that was pretty devastating. Hotel Roanoke going down and then opening back up again, that was an impact that impacted Roanoke with that and the Norfolk Southern together. I think they pretty much did that at the same time, but coming back now, they got a school over there, over general office buildings and making homes and putting apartments in one of the buildings, and Hotel Roanoke's pretty viable now. They're pretty strong as far as Virginia Tech and the hotel. I think they've got a schooling system going on over there for hotel management. But those things are pretty much the things that I can recall that was pretty devastating to the city of Roanoke as far as employment was concerned.
Suppose you were to run across somebody in the street and they had never been to Roanoke before. How would you describe Roanoke?
Oh, it's a beautiful city as far as I'm concerned, surrounded by mountains and a valley. We don't have a lot of bad weather here. I mean, if you get snow in here, it kind of settles in on top of us. It stays for a couple of days. But I think Roanoke is an area that has all the changes in climate. A lot of people come here for that reason because we do have the falls and the winters and the summers and the leaves and all of that. It's just, I think it's a city that most people could come into and live and make a decent living out of if they wanted to. And it's just a beautiful city as far as I'm concerned.
And do you have any favorite walks from childhood or favorite drives from adulthood or walks as well that really stand out to you?
Well, as I mentioned a while ago about going to Tinkerbell Swimming Pool on my bicycle, that was a pretty, that must have been about 10, 15 miles on a bicycle. It was a good ride for me. But the power, Skyline Drive, I've been all the way from Front Royal to North Carolina on the front, on the Skyline Drive, and that's a beautiful drive. We used to go pretty much up there on Easter, and as I mentioned, and drive the parkway, and used to go to Hanging Rock, Natural Bridge, used to go down there a lot. But just about every Easter, we'd go down there to the hotel and have dinner on Sunday afternoon after for Easter. But the walks were pretty much coming across Tazewell Avenue, going to Jefferson High School, or going to Rona Remy Stand or someplace like that on a Saturday. We most of the time walk, as two or three of us would walk from our home over there down 9th Street and across Tazewell Avenue by the old city cemetery. And I remember a couple of kids that walked through that cemetery one evening late, it was getting dark, and one of them said he fell into a grave that had been dug for the next day, and they had to pull him out of the grave. He was squealing and hollering, trying to get me out of here. But I never did walk through the cemetery. I usually came up Tazewell Avenue straight across, but that was always an enjoyable time for me as a kid. We, like I said, we walked pretty much everywhere we went, and or rode a bicycle as a kid, but going to school, we were used to rode the streetcar or the bus one.
Well, Corbin, I know you've talked a little bit of, in referencing some of these pictures. Would you mind describing those just a little bit?
Okay. This is a couple of pictures of me as a young child. I used to, like I mentioned, I had curly hair.
Oh, I see that now.
I had a ball in my hand. My mother, when my dad took me to get my hair cut, brought me back from the barbershop, my mother said, they said she sat down and cried because they cut all my curls off. And the other one there's just standing on the sidewalk, and I thought I had one in here that showed me with a little bitty car that I used to have.
Now, is this your house behind you in the background, or is that a neighbor?
That's a neighbor across the street. I'm not sure whether. I think that was taken on 13th Street. I just don't thought that other one. I had one of me. No, here it is. That was my little car.
Now, was this pedals, or did somebody push you?
Pedals.
Mm-hmm.
That was on 13th Street.
Well, you look all wrapped up in this big coat.
I know. It must have been cold weather, but I'd like to have a little car now.
And this was, you were in front of your house here?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's on 13th Street. This is one that was this Virginia State Guard that I was a part of. I'm standing on the front row there somewhere. But that was 1943 and 1944. As I mentioned, it was after the National Guard had been activated for World War II.
And do you remember which one you were on the front row?
Yeah, I think so.
Third one over from the left.
Yeah.
Front row.
And this is one that I was talking about, made in my grandfather's down in the country when I came back from leave.
Mm-hmm. This is you in front of, what kind of, is that your family car?
It's a 1936 Plymouth, I think, my dad's car.
And this tree that's behind you looks like a willow?
A weeping willow tree in the side of the house there. This is 1957, bicentennial for the city of Roanoke. And you had to grow a beard. They took it out of this one here, but that's me by myself. But that's the crew that was up at the fire station. And everybody had to grow a beard, a mustache, or some kind of facial hair or pay a fine in 1957 when they had the bicentennial.
And so it looks like everybody, almost everybody else has the mustache, but you
have
the beard.
I had the beard.
Only one.
And this was a fire over on, in between them, Norfolk Southern buildings up there. It was a High Street Baptist Church set right across the street over there in the garage burning on Sunday morning. This is me, the first one here in this silhouette, more or less, and Howard Radar behind me. I was captain on the engine company then.
It looks like you have a little bit more than street clothes here, but.
Yeah, you did then.
I can see what you mean about the equipment being far less.
And this is when I retired as a captain.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a couple of years ago in our church directory.
Okay. Well, that goes all the way through, doesn't it?
Pretty much.
Well, Corbin, I'm pretty much at the end of my questions. Is there anything else that I didn't ask you about that is a story or something that you wanted to pass along?
Well, you mentioned just about everything, I guess. But I did mention the fact that I'm actively involved in my church. I've been
Which church is that?
Oakland Baptist on Williamson Road. I've been a deacon. I've been chairman of the board of deacons. I've been finance chairman, properties committee chairman. I'm assistant finance chairman now. And it's been a part of my life and part of all of our lives. My kids grew up in the church, and we've been real active. And like I mentioned, I was singing in a choir for 56 years and visiting for hospitals and nursing homes and different things in the community. I've really enjoyed my church work, and praise God for the opportunity.
Well, you said that you didn't really get involved into the, you know, the Lions or anything like that, but it sounds like you've been heavily involved in your church.
Well, I have been, and people say, well, you've done enough, you need to get out, but I'm still on the properties committee and still working there. But I enjoy that, and it's been a big part of my life. And both of my daughters are now church secretaries. One of them's in Chesapeake, one of them's in Newport News.
Mm-hmm. What are your daughters' names? I didn't ask you that.
Pamela is my oldest daughter. Provost, her last name now, Provow. And Dottie, Dottie, Wallace. And she's the one that has the two children going to Tech. Mm-hmm. And my other daughter has two daughters and a son, and she had my first granddaughter in 1970, so she's 37 years old. And then she has a son by her second marriage that's going to college, Tidewater Community College. Her first husband was in the Navy, and he was stationed in Pearl Harbor, and was getting ready to get discharged, and found out he had lung cancer and died with lung cancer.
What sounds like?
And we went in 1982, went to Hawaii, and I went to Pearl Harbor. Saw the destruction they had over there in 41.
What was that like, hearing about it from the extra, and then also working on the war?
Well, it was an emotional thing, I guess, to go there and see and know that so many people had died in that morning of the attack, and there were still some of them there in that battleship. They had the float that you could get out and go over there and see that. But, it was the boys coming back from service and promoting bonds and so forth back during the early part of the war, and then getting over there and seeing it. I thought it was a really emotional time for me to get over there. And then they just had, December the 7th this year, they had some more people go back over there and talk about it, said it'd probably be the last time they'd be able to get back over there because of their age and so forth. They're up in their upper 80s and 90s now. Some of them survived at Pearl Harbor adventure. They're at the Bay Air Base especially.
Yeah, World War II vets are getting a little thin.
They are, yeah.
Well, Corbin, I want to thank you very much for your time today. This has been great. Thank
glad
you.
To do it. I hope it'll be something that'll be beneficial to you or something that somebody can use down the road anyway.
And we hope so too. Hopefully we'll be able to make it available to the community.
And if they do have something that you can scan these, we'd be glad to do it.
We'll check. Thank you.